Welcome to Champion Center Podcast. We believe that by continued listening, you can grow relationally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually. Listen in now on this worship experience already in progress.
Today is a great day, and this is a great weekend to be in the house of God, and it's a special weekend with a special guest. So I'm going to introduce our guest today, and I'm going to have him come to the stage and have you welcome him in just a moment. Let me tell you about him. He is an author and a speaker, but what he is most known for right now is that he is the special assistant to Coach Pete Carroll, head coach of the Seattle Seahawks. Anybody in the house love the Seattle Seahawks? I'm not even going to ask the question for those of you who don't. We're just glad you're here today, all right? But you may wonder what is special assistant. You're going to find out in just a moment. But right now, I'd like you to help me to welcome Ben Malcolmson as he comes in today. Let's give him a great big welcome. Got some Hawk fans.
I know. I'm so glad I'm in a safe place. This is good.
We're so glad you're here. And thankful that you had a Thursday night game. And
we
by
won.
The way, that was a good one.
We right? won.
And are able to be with us on a Sunday. And I'm just wondering if I could lobby with you for football games to always be on Mondays and Thursdays instead of Sundays.
Yeah, and those 10 a.m. kickoffs are the worst.
Those are the worst. Thank you. Thank you for feeling that. Those are the worst. I will say our Saturday night services grow immensely on those weekends, though. So what is the most crazy thing that Coach Carroll has ever asked you to do as his personal assistant?
Well, he's asked me about 100 crazy things to do in this last week, but probably the craziest thing I can think of is a couple years ago, he had an idea that he wanted to get Rob Riggle to record a video for our Jumbotron. Rob Riggle is kind of a famous comedian. He's in a bunch of movies, and Coach comes up with the ideas, and then it's my job to see him come to life. So I was like, oh, that's no problem. I'll call him up. So we call up Rob Riggle. Thankfully, we had a friendship with him and say, hey, Rob, here's our idea. We want to record you on video with something for the Jumbotron for the game this weekend. He's like, oh yeah, it's no problem at all. The only problem is I'm shooting a movie right now for the next 4 months, so you're gonna have to come to me. I was like, oh, that's no problem at all. Like, was it California or something? He's like, no, I'm actually in Alaska. So the next morning I flew up to Anchorage, drove a while, pulled out the video camera, recorded him for 10 minutes, drove back to the airport, flew back to Seattle, and was back in the office that night. So that was probably one of the craziest things, and it was up on the Jumbotron that weekend. So.
God bless every personal assistant. Okay, so I'm gonna ask you this question early on because it's not the most positive element to talk about with the Seattle Seahawks, but we were supposed to win 2 Super Bowls in a row.
Yeah. Do we really have to talk about this?
Yeah, we're going to go there.
It's good. My counselor says it's good to talk about, so this will help me find more healing.
Because here's the deal. There's a section in your book about it, and I read it, and I was really moved by the story through your eyes. And as a leader of people and as someone who knows the people are counting on you and know that you're leading the charge and you want to get somewhere, to hear you talk about that from your perspective, when you called Pete Carroll, I think in the book, when you saw him collapse in that moment on the field when things didn't turn out like they were supposed to, you said it was like looking at your second father, and your emotions were going crazy. But here's the deal: you are his voice, and you are the one who prepares his after-game talks and gives him bullet points and things to say at press conferences and social media or whatever it might be. And in that moment, you had prepared this victory kind of talk and were preparing it. And then the ball didn't go over the goal line. And we lost that game. And so within a moment, we went from great victory to heart-wrenching defeat. And you ran to the locker room and started to kind of put together some thoughts. But I want you to pick it up there and just tell what Coach Carroll did that we never maybe heard about or got to talk about.
Yeah, so I mean, everyone I'm sure remembers we were this far from winning our second Super Bowl in a row. Sitting there on the 1 yard line, 20 seconds left, and we're this far away from winning the next Super Bowl. And of course, you know what happens, throw the interception and the game's over. And we go from the highest of highs to all of a sudden the most excruciating way to possibly lose a Super Bowl. So I'm sitting there, I'm like, I don't know what coach could possibly say in this moment. I was at a loss. And so I said, Coach, this is gonna have to come from your heart. Like, I can't help you on this. And so he gets up in front of the team and he stands there and he says, hey guys, if you're gonna blame anyone, you blame me. I'm sorry. And he stood there and he took all the blame. And he wasn't the one that threw the pass or ran the route. And he wasn't even the one that called the play. But because he was the leader, because he knew everyone was looking at him, he kind of laid on that grenade and he took the blame. And he allowed everyone to not look around, who can I blame and point fingers at, but he kind of took that upon himself. And that example of leadership, I'll never forget for the rest of my life. And each of us, in our own ways, are leaders, whether it's at work or even among our family members. We all have a leadership role in life. And I think that is something that we can all take with us, that we don't need to go look around pointing fingers and looking for who to blame, but we can be those leaders that kind of take that responsibility in just really powerful ways, and it helps others find healing.
And you know, we live in a time where people are so quick to blame, and people are in social media, they're just looking for people to point fingers at and put blame on. And I wanted you to hear that part of the story today, because I hope that a young person, a business leader, whoever you are, wherever you are, whatever stage in life, Pete Carroll didn't just do that in that moment. He had been doing that all of his life. That's how he thinks. And great leaders think that way. That's what I'm trying to tell you. He won the Super Bowl the year before. But this one didn't work out that way. But ownership and responsibility, even when it's extremely painful, and you wanna shift the blame, is one of the greatest attributes that we can have as a person, as a leader. This is just an element of the story that I felt like I wanted everyone to get the privilege to hear. Now I want to go on. I want to go back, rewind, and I want to talk about your days as a journalism student. You went to USC, University of Southern California, as a student there, and there was a crazy turn of events. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, so as a student there, I was studying journalism and was working for the school newspaper. That was kind of part of my assignment, was to write for the school newspaper. And I got assigned to cover the football team for 3 seasons, sophomore, junior, and senior year of college. And this was at the height of USC football. This is when USC was number one team 3 straight years in a row, and just an incredible experience. So during my time of writing for the school newspaper, there I am going to 2 Heisman Trophy ceremonies, 3 national championship football games. This was incredible. I was so fortunate to be able to do this. And I was gearing up to graduate. I was trying to look for one final good story to kind of go out with a bang from the newspaper. And so I was scouring, looking up, what can I write about? Write one final good story. And I see an ad in the Daily Trojan, the school newspaper, saying walk-on tryouts were coming up. Now, walk-ons are the end of the bench guys. They're the guys that don't get scholarships to play in college. And they never get newspaper articles written about them. They're never on SportsCenter. So I figured this would be a pretty cool story, pretty unique, write about these guys that don't get any attention. And so I start interviewing some guys that are gonna go through the tryout. And then in this process, it hits me that, well, why don't I go through the tryout myself and show how hard it is? And it'll be pretty funny too, because I mean, I'm a student newspaper reporter going through the tryout, just write an article. I was small and skinny. This was the number one team in the country. And before I forget, I hadn't played football since fifth grade. So this was going to be a total joke. I mean, I was going to try out for the number one college football team in the country as someone who hadn't played football since fifth grade. This was going to be a total joke. So I couldn't wait to go through the tryout, make a fool out of myself, write a self-deprecating article. It was going to be awesome. Go through the tryout, get beat up, get home black and blue, but I had hit a gold mine. I had found the coolest article I could have ever imagined. And there I was writing my story, and 2 days after the tryout, as I'm putting the finishing touches on my story, I get a phone call early in the morning saying, "Hey, is this Ben?" It's like, "Yeah." And they're like, "Well, you made the football team." I wish I could have laughed in the moment, but I was in such shock. And I was like, "Wait, what?" And my first thought was this had to be a prank call. One of my friends was prank calling me. I was like, "Okay, joke's over, who is this?" And they're like, no, your name's on the list. You're on the football team." So before I could even think, I'd jump, get on my bike, pedal as fast as I can over to the football building. I can't wait to see my name on this list to see if this is actually real. And about halfway to the football building, it hits me that Coach Carroll, who was head coach of USC at the time, is renowned for pulling pranks. He's a kid at heart. I mean, you could pull up YouTube right now, type in Pete Carroll prank, and you'll get a dozen pranks right there. So I'm like, "Oh no, I'm gonna be the butt end of Coach Carroll's latest prank." So now I'm gearing up to have the rug pulled out from under me. I trudge my way up the stairs, and I'm fully expecting like ESPN cameras to be there, like Snoop Dogg, Will Ferrell, you know, like Coach Carroll is gonna point his finger and laugh at me. And I turn the corner and there's Coach with a big old grin on his face. And I was like, "Okay, Coach, joke's over." He's like, no, you can catch the ball, you can run fast, we want you on the team, are you in?" So right there in that moment, my life took a total turn. I went from a student newspaper reporter who was trying to write one good story to all of a sudden being on the number one college football team in the country, having not played football since fifth grade. This was crazy. So they hand me a playbook, and I open the playbook, and I mean, I'd played video games like Madden and stuff, but this had there was no relation to the playbook on Madden. This was so hard, trying to learn these plays. They hand me my helmet and pads, and I didn't know which way was front and back on the pads. I was a fish out of water to the extreme. So there I am at practice. I'm getting my head banged and just my bell rung left and right, seeing stars every day, getting bruised up all over the place. And I'm starting to get it. I'm starting to gain some weight in the weight room and eating a lot of Taco Bell at night and starting to look a little bit more like a football player. But still, I'm fighting an uphill battle here because I didn't belong there at all. So about a month in, I'm in the middle of spring practice and I get my hand caught, just kind of a freak play. I get my hand caught in a guy's pad. He rolls over me and I dislocate my shoulder. And I'm laying there on my back, looking up at the sky, and the doctors are rushing out, and they rush me over to the hospital there on campus, and they say I need emergency reconstructive surgery on my shoulder. So a few days later, I go in, get the surgery done. They said I was gonna be out for 9 months. So 9 months from that point was after the season was over. I was a senior, I only had that one season to play, but it was already over. I was crushed because I had started to believe that this new life that I was living was real. And it just gets ripped from my hands, just like that. So for some reason, I decided to devote myself to the rehab and maybe, just maybe, I could get back faster than 9 months. 4.5 months later, the doctors say, "We cannot believe we're doing this. We've never seen anything like this before, but you're cleared to return to the practice field." Half the time that the doctor said, total, miraculous, divine healing, I was back. So I was back to practicing, but I really had no chance of playing in the game. There's 100 guys on the team, and there's 99 guys ahead of me that deserve to play. So there was no chance of me playing. But a group of students didn't want to believe that. They started a little campaign called Get Ben In. They made t-shirts, they made posters, they started chants in the student section, "Get Ben In," during the fourth quarter. And I kind of became this little rally cry among the student body, and it was crazy because I was the last guy who deserved it. And it was so funny and so crazy. We make it through the whole season. We make it to our last game of the year, home game against Notre Dame. And I hadn't gotten in the game yet, so I only had that one last chance. And Fox Sports did a little documentary. We're going to show a 3-minute clip here. Kind of tells the rest of the story.
Arch rival Notre Dame was USC's final opponent of the year and Ben's last chance to play for the Trojans.
I got up in the morning at the hotel and was watching the television, and I saw a big sign that said, "Get Ben in," with a big photo of Ben on it. I'm thinking, this is remarkable.
It was so cool. People rallied behind me.
92,000 people, and all very feverish because it was the Notre Dame game. It was spine tingling.
If I could have just taken that as my lasting memory, that would have been the best thing ever. This is my last chance. It was senior night at the Coliseum.
We were asked as a group of parents to come out on the field and form a gauntlet for the players to run through. And, of course, the first name they mentioned,
Ben Malcolmson!
He comes running through like Traveler the Horse, and he ran through the gauntlet. I look up on the Jumbotron, and there it is. It says Ben Malcolmson from Highland Park, Texas. And I went, oh my gosh. Many people tell me I'd give my left arm to have that experience. And I go, wow, it really is that big a deal.
The Notre Dame game couldn't have been a more storied way to end.
After all, Notre Dame's Rudy Rudiger's walk-on story had inspired a feature film, Rudy.
Almost like it was divine intervention.
We were up 2 scores, and I remember that Notre Dame had tried to onside kick the ball.
The score then got to a point where there was a sufficient spread that the coaches felt comfortable in putting Ben in the game.
Finally, 8 months of sweat, pain, and dedication paid off for Ben Malcolmson.
It was an out-of-body experience for sure. Coach said, "Benny, you're in."
We saw him running out there, and we said, oh my gosh, he's actually going to get into the game.
It was just an awesome experience. I definitely went nuts.
Even though it was only like 10 seconds of me on the field on that play, it meant so much to me for all the work that I put in and all the challenges I'd overcome, but also for the people who had started to support me. And it was just not only my friends, it was so many people around campus, people in class, people I didn't even know.
What a remarkable experience. And I think that's what Ben kind of lived for.
Though he was only on the field for one play, Ben accomplished something few could ever imagine.
That dream that everyone has to what would it be like to be out there and be a part of it, he got to live it.
For Ben to be able to do that was something that I think really proved to him that I can do something extraordinary in my life.
It is very special for these guys to be able to hang in this program. It's a very unique program. That's a lifelong memory for those guys to make it through because of their will and their toughness and their desire and the way they dream. It's a beautiful thing sometimes.
It's just surreal. It's unbelievable. It seems like only stuff that happens in movies. It's one of the highest moments of my life, without a doubt.
Wow. That's amazing, huh? So amazing. And then it became evident, as this all unfolded, that this was more than just like something you could have done or you could have made happen, and that God had a purpose. And Ben, I love that, by the way, get Ben in, get Ben in. But it was like these, all the dots started connecting, and I want you to go ahead and share the rest of that story and how God was in it all.
Yeah, I had this deep sense on my heart almost from the moment I found out I was on the team that God had me there for a reason. That I was there for a purpose. Because why would he place me, who hadn't played football in 10 years, who was only going through the tryout to write an article, why would he place me on that football team? There had to be a reason. There had to be a purpose. And I know as I say that, that many, if not most, if not all of you in here and watching online can resonate with that in some form or fashion. that maybe God, maybe you feel like God has placed you at your workplace for a purpose. Maybe in your neighborhood for a purpose. Mm-hmm. Maybe among your family members, your friends for a purpose. That we have this deep sense inside of us that God has us here for a reason. And so I was pressing into that from day one. I was so excited to see what God had me on that team for. And so a little bit of the time into being on the team, I got an idea, I'll start a Bible study for the team. So I got a Bible study lesson ready, I got a room ready, passed out flyers to all my teammates telling them about this Bible study. And the time came for our first Bible study, and I was the only one that showed up. You can imagine how discouraged I was. I'm like, God, I thought I was here for a reason. I thought I was here for a purpose. Well, I missed it. What's going on? So it took me a little time to get through that discouragement, and then a little bit later, I get another idea that I'll start a prayer group for the team. The Friday before every game, we'll pray together. Maybe this is my purpose. So I made flyers, passed them out to all my teammates, told all my friends on the team, hey, we're gonna have a prayer group this Friday, come on out. The time comes for our first prayer meeting and no one shows up. So there I am, twice as discouraged, twice as defeated, and doubting and questioning God even more. God, what is my purpose here? Why did you put me on this team? So then I'm battling through that discouragement, and I'm reading in Matthew 5, it says, let your light shine before men. And it hits me like a ton of bricks. That lights, before they go out and create a Bible study or go create a prayer group or create whatever event, lights first and foremost shine. And I just needed to shine. I just needed to be a light among my teammates. And that was God's purpose for me there. So I had this renewed energy, this renewed excitement that God had me on this team for a purpose, and this was it. I just needed to be a light. So I devoted myself to that for several weeks, and again, I find myself seeing zero results, zero fruit, and I'm just as discouraged as before. And questioning God even more, why am I here? Why am I on this team? What is my purpose here? I'm just not seeing it. And I know as I say that, you all feel that too. Or maybe you felt it, maybe you're feeling it right now, that, man, I thought I was here for a reason. I thought I was here for a purpose, but I'm seeing no results. And in a lot of ways, I feel like I'm failing more than anything. So we're gearing up. We're almost at the end of the season at this point. We get chosen to play in the Rose Bowl on New Year's Day. And a few weeks before the Rose Bowl, I was reading in Isaiah 55. It says, if his word goes out, it does not return empty. And it hit me that I need to put his word out there and it won't return empty. God is always faithful to his promises. And so I called my grandfather and I said, hey, can I get 100 Bibles? He worked for the Gideon's organization. And I was like, I got this idea. I want to put 100 Bibles out there. And I know that God is faithful to his word. It's not going to come back empty. So he sent me 100 Bibles. I get them a few days before Christmas, and I figured this would be a cool kind of anonymous Christmas gift. Typed up a little red note that said, a Christmas gift for you, the greatest present you will ever receive, Jesus Christ. Merry Christmas. Stuck one in every Bible. And at midnight on Christmas Eve, went into the locker room, placed one in every single locker. I couldn't wait to see what God was going to do there. I had finally found my purpose. I had been through all this failure, all this defeat, but this was it. This is why God had me on this team. We had Christmas Day off, and on the 26th, we come back together, and I had the highest of hopes. I mean, I'm fully expecting like revival to break out in the locker room, like gold light to be emanating from the doors, the hallelujah chorus to be sung by all the players. I mean, I was so fired up. I walk up to the locker room door, pulling the door open, just fully expecting my purpose, God's purpose, to be revealed finally after a year. And I open the door, and pages of the Bible are shredded all over the floor, ripped up, covering every square inch of carpet. I was absolutely devastated. I went from the highest of hopes to the lowest of low. I'd battled through all this discouragement, all this defeat to try to find my purpose, and once again, I failed miserably. I was crushed. So we go through the rest of that week. We play in the Rose Bowl. We win the Rose Bowl. It was an amazing experience from a football perspective, but in my soul, in my heart, I knew that I had missed my purpose. And it was so hard, so discouraging. A few days after the Rose Bowl, I'm sitting at home and I get a phone call from a friend of mine saying, hey, did you hear about Mario? Mario is our kicker on the team, one of my closest friends on the team. He's an amazing guy. I was like, oh no, what happened to Mario? I'm like, oh no, you didn't hear. Mario died. In the middle of the night, Mario mysteriously passed away at 21 years old, just a few days after the Rose Bowl. I was stricken with so much grief in that moment. Grief that kind of made all that discouragement seem like nothing at this point. That grief just overwhelmed me. I was at the lowest of lows. Because not only was I dealing with the grief of the death of a friend, but I was also dealing with this responsibility, like, man, did I do enough in Mario's life? Sure, I invited him to a Bible study that he didn't come to. I invited him to a prayer group, he didn't come to that. I tried to be a good friend to him, but I don't think anything happened there. And I put a Bible in his locker, but obviously that didn't work. It was hard, I was so discouraged. So we go to his funeral together as a team a few days later. And I'm sitting right there on the pew, and as eight of our offensive linemen carry his casket down the center aisle, I look up right as the Bible passes by, and on top of the casket was the Bible with a red note sticking out of it, sitting right on top of his casket. And I had no idea what it really meant at the time, but it just felt like God's personal touch for me to comfort me in that time. And it was so profound. I was so grateful for that. It was like God had seen me. Even in my hardest times, even in my most discouraged times, God was like, I see you. It was amazing. Helped me get through that time, and I ended up working at USC for the next 3 years, and then Coach Carroll took the job with the Seahawks in 2010 and asked me to come up with him, and I moved up to Seattle, not knowing anyone but Coach Carroll. So I was like the desperate guy trying to make friends. Someone was friendly at Starbucks, I'd try to make friends with them, you know, like I'd be sitting in church just like praying the whole time. I hope someone asked me to lunch after, you know, like I was the desperate, lonely guy. And I come across this really friendly guy. He's like, hey, we need volunteer leaders for Young Life. Can you come on out? And I'd never heard of Young Life at that point, but I was like, whatever it is, count me in. I need something to do in my spare time. And so I show up at this leader meeting, informational meeting for Young Life, and a former teammate of mine walks in. His name was Taylor. He was our punter on the team. And I hadn't seen him since Mario's funeral 4 years earlier. And when you run into someone you hadn't seen in years, 1,000 miles from the last place you saw him, your world kind of gets rocked. And so we kind of removed ourselves from the meeting. We're catching up. And I'm like, Taylor, what's been going on in your life? He's like, dude, my life has totally turned around in the last few years. I was like, well, what's up? He's like, do you remember the last week we were on the team together? There were Bibles in all of our lockers. Now, I hadn't thought about this Bible since Mario's funeral, because this Bible symbolized discouragement, defeat, and ultimately the death of a friend of mine. And so when he said that, I just played dumb. I was like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I kind of remember it, not really sure. And so Taylor tells me that he grew up in a Christian home. He grew up going to church. And when he went to college, he decided to live life on his own terms and just go his own way. He was tired of religion and church. So he saw a Bible in his locker that day, and he was like, what the heck? I don't need this right now. I don't want this. So he threw his in the back corner of his locker. And he's going out to the practice field that morning, thinking he was the last one to leave the locker room. And he's pushing the door to go out to the field. And he hears a voice in the back corner of the locker room going, what is this? And he's confused because he thought he was the last one in there. And he turns around, he looks back, and there's Mario, our kicker, thumbing through the Bible, going, what is this? Now Taylor and Mario, they were best friends, the punter and kicker, they spent all their time together. Taylor screams across the locker room going, Mario, have you never seen a Bible before? And Mario's like, no, what am I supposed to do with this? And so Taylor, for some reason, sets down his helmet and pads right there at the doorstep, turns around, walks back, sits down next to Mario, and for 45 minutes takes them through the Bible. Every word written in red are the words of Jesus Christ, the Son of God, the Savior of the world, the one who came to die, to take on your sins, to make you right with God. They missed half of practice that day. Taylor said for the rest of that week, Mario couldn't put the Bible down. Every spare moment he had, he was reading the Bible. Every bus ride, every few minutes between meetings. And when he wasn't reading the Bible, he was asking Taylor questions. Tell me more about Jesus. Tell me about God. I need more. Taylor said just a few days before the Rose Bowl that week, Mario gave his life over to Jesus and started a relationship with God. And Taylor said that he got the same phone call I did, that his best friend, Mario, had passed away. And obviously he was overcome with sadness and grief, but he was also overcome with a profound sense of God's power and grace and love for Mario and for him. And in that moment that he got the call, he saw God at work. He saw God saving Mario just in the days before he was going to pass away. And he recommitted his life to Christ on the spot that he got that phone call. And Taylor said, yeah, my life hasn't been the same since. 4 years later, here I am. God is just so real and God is so good. And I'm shaking. I'm on the verge of tears at this point. I'm like, Taylor, that's the craziest story I've ever heard. And it's even crazier because I was the one that put the Bible in the locker and I thought it was a total failure. This is our God. God has an incredible purpose for each and every one of you in here tonight, today and online, that God desires to do amazing things through each and every one of us. So no matter where you find yourself in this story, maybe you relate with Mario. Maybe you're like, what is this? What am I supposed to do with this thing? Maybe you relate to Taylor. Maybe you've been walking from God, away from him for the last few years. Maybe you relate with me. Maybe you're discouraged right now, feeling like, man, I'm just not seeing my purpose right now. Wherever you find yourself in this story, know that God is with you, that he has an amazing purpose for you, a purpose that is far greater than you could even fathom right now. A purpose that someday, whether here on this earth or in heaven, you're going to be sharing a story about too. So thank you all so much. God bless you as you go out. Be encouraged today. Thank you all.
Seated just for another moment, I want to say a couple of things here. First of all, I want to thank you for your story. I want to thank you for your determination and showing the resilience that you showed throughout your own story to get back up again and to do what your book says, and that is to walk on. This is what you did as a football player, you walked on. But I read this book this week, and this is a powerful book of the ups and downs and the challenges and the opportunities to quit, but you following and continuing in the sense that God had a plan. And God had a purpose, and God had a direction. And that even when things didn't appear, you know, that there's Bible shredded around the locker room or nobody's showing up at a prayer meeting, that you sit before us today as just an example of somebody who in the moments of discouragement didn't quit. And I wanna just salute you for that. I wanna thank you for that. And I want to also say to people who are here, there's a section in your book that you were deciding between. Your dream was to work for the Dallas newspapers, and you had an opportunity to go there. And then there was another opportunity that was more of like a ministry opportunity. And there was a person, an advisor, a mentor, and you were trying to figure it out, who said to you, said, Ben, there is no such thing as a spiritual or non-spiritual job. You are there by design. And God has this plan for your life. And a lot of times, you know, we've been, as a church, we've been the last few weeks asking the question, what do you believe in God for? And the whole idea that I've explained is that between your current reality and where God is taking you, there's a big gap. And in that gap, there are days of real discouragement. And there are days where you feel like, God, where are you? And God, are you even involved in this? This doesn't even feel like God. And you feel forsaken, you feel abandoned, you feel discouraged, you feel like it's not working out. Like, but to continue to have confidence and faith and to put your trust in the Lord as you walk out His purpose and His plan for your life, even sometimes blindly, even sometimes not knowing, but continuing to walk on. Everybody say, walk on.
Walk on.
Say it again, walk on.
Walk on.
And with this story and the way that it, I think, impacts all of us, I think the idea that you have found yourself in a place now where you're in a secular environment. You didn't go to Dallas. Pete Carroll asked you to come with him to Seattle. You came. You've been here for nine years now as his personal assistant. You're not in a ministry job. And yet, you're a great testimony. And I want to say to everyone, please hear today. And please understand today that you're, because this story, here's what I want to say. This story, if I were to capture Ben's story in one verse of the Bible, it would be trust in the Lord with all of your heart and lean not to your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him and He will direct your path. Wow, wow, wow. So thank you. Thank you so much, man.
Thank you for listening today. We hope that you enjoyed today's teaching. If you'd like to help support this podcast, give today and help spread messages all over the world. Download our app and select Give or go to cc.church/give. Thanks and have a great week.